on the surface. One of them, the ornate eye, used to denote the home of the gods, which the old Prelians believed was in the Great North, past the mountain range of my home. I pick it up and turn slowly until the medallion shivers in my hand, indicating that I'm facing north. Well, I can't very well put it back now and pretend like I don't know what I'm doing. I return to my table with the medallion and set it down as discreetly as possible. Meridin, Kip, and the rest of the team pick items, and I do my best not to wince when each forgery arrives on the table. At least they're avoiding the yellow, like I'd asked. But it's clear from what they're choosing that they have no knowledge of old Prelian art or enchantment, or even the basics of glyph work. I make a mental note to bring this up to Hawk. My team needs classes on how to spot forgeries. Well, and how to spot artifacts. Really, we just need classes on everything.
1 point for Master Magpie's team,
Master Tersel declares at the end of round two. 1 point is then declared for Master Crow's team. This person a different one from before. If I had to guess, I would say there's not an expert on Crow's team. They're just guessing out of luck. But now, I need to go back and get that egg. I have a feeling that if I don't, we'll end up with a tie, and I'm willing to bet that a tiebreaker would not go in our team's favor. This time, I head straight for the weight of crushing egg with no charges left. I pick it up and bring it to our table, and sweat as I watch the others pick their choices. When everything is chosen this time, Master Tersel goes to Master Crow's team first and picks through their objects with the archivist at his side.
1 point for Master Crow's team again,
Master Tersel declares.
Total points, 3.
He strolls over to our side and I busily do mental math. Okay, we're at 3 points at the moment. My egg should get us to 4, which is a win. Unless they don't count it because of the lack of charges. If someone else on the team has picked a winner.
No points this round for Magpie's team.
What? I blurt out, looking up. So deactivated artifacts don't count after all? Archivist Kestrel seems puzzled by my reaction.
They do count. You do not have any real artifacts at your table. We have a tie.
I glare up at both of them. That's not right. Mine is a real artifact. It just doesn't have charges.
The guild frowns on poor losers,
Master Tersel begins. Archivist Kestrel turns the object over in his hands, peering down at it. I'm not a poor loser, I declare, stabbing a finger at the stupid thing. It's a legitimate artifact. Read the glyphs on the bottom. It's a weight of crushing, but it's out of charges. They're a common sort of thing. Look at it again. Master Tersel gives me a pitying look that only pisses me off more. Just look, all right?
This is not very becoming of your team,
Master Tersel continues.
And if your teacher were here, she would hear about it. This is the reason why teams need to be supervised. You can't be left alone. The rules are rules for a reason.
She's right,
Archivist Kestrel says suddenly. All eyes are on him. And me, but I keep staring at the archivist, waiting for him to elaborate.
She's right,
he repeats, and shows the underside of the egg-shaped weight to Tersel.
Look at the markings. Look at the usage of lapis. There's one like this in the archive, and it's got the same angle of cuts in the stone.
They bend their heads together, scrutinizing the artifact. Lark nudges me, but I ignore her. My every fiber is vibrating with anxiousness as I watch the two of them. For some reason, it's very important to me that I be correct about this. I've always prided myself on my Prelian scholarship. If I'm not right, then I've got nothing to my credit. Not looks, not wealth, not holder name. Master Tersel grunts after a long, interminable pause.
I suppose.
It's truly a shame it no longer has charges.
Archivist Kestrel says in a bright voice, clutching the egg to his chest as if it is precious.
I would love to see how much weight the Prelians consider to be crushing. It would be a fascinating bit of scholarship, don't you think?
Absolutely, I force myself to reply. I want to talk about other weights that were mentioned in prior tomes, and the units of measurement that Prelians used depending upon the situation, but now isn't the time. I eye Master Tersel. So this means we have 4 points? The Master's jaw clenches and his nostrils flare. It's clear he doesn't want to announce us as the winners. He looks over at Master Crow, who seems equally irate, and then turns back to me.
The game is cancelled. No winners, no losers.
That's not fair, Locke protests. We fucking won.
You?
Master Tersel snarls and points at my face.
You stay behind. The rest of you are dismissed. The rest of the games are cancelled. Spread the word with the remaining teams.
The room empties out with the sound of scraping chairs and grumbling voices. There's more disappointment as others file into the hall and announce the cancellation, and my face burns as I remain in place. The others on my team stay at my side, and Gwenna moves to link her fingers with mine. Master Tersel gives Lark, Gwenna, Kip, and Meriden a dismissive look, even as Archivist Kestrel continues to study the egg in his hands.
The rest of you can go,
he says.
You're not in trouble.
But I am, I ask.
The guild frowns upon cheating.
Gwenna's hand tightens on mine, and she steps in front of me. She did not cheat. How could she possibly? This is horseshit, Locke declares. You just don't like us because of Magpie. Meriden and Kip make angry noises of assent. I'm flattered they're all so quick to defend me, but I can tell from the guildmaster's expression that it's useless. He doesn't know how I managed to identify the objects, and I can't exactly tell him that I've been studying rare tomes ever since I was a tot. No one would have access to those kinds of books save for a guild member or a holder who'd paid a great deal to buy or borrow them. I can't point that out. Or that I had a tutor, a retired artificer who was too old to go tunnel crawling, who taught me how to read glyphs. I can't say any of that. I'm supposed to be just another person here, learning with the rest of them. So I give Gwenna's hand a squeeze, and then detangle myself. It's all right. I'll stay behind and answer their questions. I've done nothing wrong. You should go on back to the nest. Meriden and Lark reluctantly head out, with Kip at their heels. Only Gwenna remains behind, scowling at everyone. I have to give her another reassuring hand squeeze and a gentle shove toward the door. She stumbles forward, and then glares at Master Tersel and Archivist Kestrel. If she's not back by dusk, I will have every Taurian in the city at your doorstep. Then she turns and leaves, and I'm left alone with the 2 men.
Sit down, fledgling,
Master Tersel says in a furious voice.
I want to know all your tricks.
My tricks?
How you did this. How you managed to cheat the system.
He gestures at the artifacts.
How you guessed right all 3 times.
He indicates the egg cradled in the archivist's hands.
How you knew this was legitimate when even we did not.
Luck? I answer weakly. He leans forward over the table, the look on his face hard and unyielding.
Sit down. You're not leaving until we get some answers.
The archivist looks up as if seeing me for the first time.
Are you the one who married the Taurian? Your guildmaster's assistant?
I didn't think it was possible, but Master Tersel's expression gets even harder. I sit. I imagine I'm going to be here for quite a while.
16. Hawk. Funny how things change the older you get. When I was a young bull, I wanted nothing more than to be in the tunnels at all times, exploring the ancient grottos and ruins of Old Prell. It angered me when we had to return early due to an injury in the party, or when Magpie started her descent into the bottle, because it meant we couldn't go out hunting. Not without Five and not without our leader. Now, though, as we finish another retrieval mission, I'm glad to be home. Glad to be done with the soft idiots who pass for guild members these days. After 2 straight days in the tunnels, I'm sweaty and dirty from the hiking and digging, I'm tired, and more than that, I'm irritated and disgusted because the team we rescued made poor choice after poor choice and ended up with empty hands to show for it. If they'd run into a nest of ratlings in an unexpected location, I could have some sympathy for them. Instead, they'd eaten mushrooms they'd found in the tunnels and ended up injuring themselves. They'd used a rescue signal stone for no reason and wasted our time. I know I'm not the only Taurian who feels that way. Raptor, myself, and a big older bull named Osprey went down to retrieve the team because a Sacred Five isn't needed for a rescue party, it seems. We were all 3 in a foul mood when we left, and are in an even worse one now as we head through the cobbled streets on the way home, our guild pay for the retrieval mission jingling in our pockets. The 3 of us pause at an intersection, the general guild housing the next street over. Across from us is a popular pub frequented by the guild members, and it's packed to the gills with human men laughing and drinking and having a great time. Idiots, Raptor mutters, shifting on his feet, his hand on the strap of his pack. 10 Crown says that our team is going to head straight for the bar once the healers are done with them. They won't learn a thing.
Do they ever? Osprey harumps. Whoever's in charge of the guild criteria for testing is clearly on the take. In my day, these fools wouldn't ever leave the training grounds, much less head into danger. Mushrooms, of all things. He shakes his shaggy head. Insanity.
At least we get paid, I say, like I always do. Normally, it appeases me, knowing that the extra funding is going to a good cause, another step toward repaying my debt to the guild. Today, though, it just makes me bitter, because I know in another few weeks I'm going to be back in the same tunnels, retrieving the same idiots. And the guild thinks a few coins tossed our way makes everything better and excuses poor behavior. But no one ever asks Taurians what they think of things. Before I let that path of thinking sour me, I adjust my pack against my shoulder. I should get home. New wife and all that. Strangely, just thinking about Aspeth waiting for me is pleasing to think about. She'll be in bed, no doubt snoring that little feminine snore of hers, her mouth slightly open. She'll fuss at me over training because she likes to fuss and protest. I'll bathe, and maybe she'll give my cock that intense stare again, squinting at it as if she's never seen anything like it before and flattering my ego.
So you decided to stay after all? Raptor asks me, pausing.
When I nod, he claps me on the shoulder.
Can't decide if you're an idiot or brilliant for taking a wife to handle the Conquest Moon, but I'm leaning toward idiot.
Definite idiot, Osprey agrees.
Thanks. Raptor glances up at the sky.
Moon's gonna be ripe in another 3 weeks. Gonna be some kind of hell on the lead-up. Maybe a wife is smart after all.
I'm heading back to my village, Osprey says. Lots of eager widows looking for a few nights of fun and not much else. If you change your mind, you can come with, he tells me. I leave in 3 days.
I nod, though I know I won't take him up on the offer. Appreciate it.
I leave tomorrow, Raptor says. Take some time off. My 5 fell apart, so it's a good break from me before returning to work once Lord Dipshit finds more for the team. I'll be back in time for the fledgling tests later this year, since we all know what a fuckstorm that will be.
I'm trying not to think about it, but he's not wrong. To pass the guild test, every person must take part in both a team exercise and an individual one. For the team exercise, every 5 has to make a quick trip to the tunnels to retrieve an artifact placed there by guild masters, or to find a brand new one. Those who pass both their tests return and celebrate their inclusion in the guild. Those who fail are fished out quickly, if they're alive, or slowly, if they're not. And it falls to the guild's Taurians to clean things up. Individual tests are usually tailored to the student's particular weaknesses, which is why I have to push Aspeth so hard. She can't stay soft and naive, not if she expects to become a guild artificer. We're months away from anything like that, however. I'll see you when you return, I tell my friends. We part, and I make the brief trek back to Magpie's dorm, my thoughts full of Aspeth. Is it weird that I just want to sniff her? To breathe in her scent and let it wash over me? I'm sure it's the conquest moon making me obsess over a woman's scent. But I imagine what she smells like when she's aroused, and the thought of it makes my cock stiffen. Definitely the conquest moon. I surreptitiously adjust my cock so walking home isn't quite so difficult. The moment I step inside the dorm, though, all is chaos. There's shouting in the kitchen, and equipment is strewn all over the entryway to the house. I step over it, heading toward the source of the noise. The kitchen is even messier than outside. Magpie is by the stove, trying to pull a too-tight guild blouse over her chemise. Lark is stabbing a wheel of cheese into small chunks with her sword. Meriden is crying and packing the cheese chunks into small pouches. And the Slitherskin is trying to pull a too-large jar off a shelf, 3 other broken ones near his feet. Gwenna is shouting at Magpie, who looks as if her head is about to split open. I'm also pretty sure every weapon from the practice room is on the table. What happened? Where's Aspeth? Meriden bursts into fresh tears. Gwenna storms across the room toward me, her expression one of pure fire.
You! High time you showed up! You think you can just gallivant off and leave us behind?
I arch a brow at her. I was on a rescue mission. I left a message with Aspeth.
Yes, well, we need you more than anyone else does.
She puts her hands on her hips and glares at me.
Now that you're here, you need to go and save Aspeth before they torture her for information.
No one's torturing anyone,
Magpie declares.
I've said that twice now. Can someone help me with my sleeve?
Gwenna scowls at her and doesn't move to help. No one does. Instead, Gwenna turns back to me.
This is all your fault,
she hisses.
If you hadn't left, Aspeth wouldn't be in this mess.
Her anger, as well as my own fatigue, make me unpleasant. I lean in, looming over her. You want to tell me exactly what mess it is I'm supposed to be responsible for? She leans back, but only a little, her expression remaining fierce.
We were playing some sort of artifact game against the other teams of fledglings, and they decided that Aspeth was cheating. They're holding her hostage at the guild hall and won't let us in to see her. That's why Magpie's getting dressed.
She casts a dismissive look over at the guildmaster.
For all the good that will do.
I'm helping,
Magpie protests.
You're a soggy mess is what you are,
Gwenna declares.
If you weren't such a waste of skin, we wouldn't be in this mess, now would we? Hey.
Lark protests.
That's my aunt. Your aunt is a drunken waste of skin.
Gwenna repeats.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Lark glances at me and then drops her gaze, sullen.
I mean, she's trying. She's not trying very hard.
Gwenna glares over at the two of them again.
And now Aspeth is suffering because there was no one to speak up for her. So someone in charge needs to fix this. Now!
I look over at Magpie. Her head is stuck in her clothes, one hand flailing above her head. Sigh. I set my pack down. Someone help Magpie with her sleeve. I'll go get my wife. By the time I make it to the main guild hall, I'm a tired, angry, cranky mess. My hooves are still crusted with mud from the caverns, and I smell like old sweat. I want nothing more than to change out of my old clothes and take a bath, but it seems I'm having to retrieve my wife instead. And my mood grows more dire with every moment that passes. When I storm inside, wild-eyed and tail swishing, an apprentice spots me and immediately runs down a hall. No doubt he's been told to notify someone of my arrival. Sure enough, Master Tursel appears in the hall from one of the doors, his mouth tight and his expression troubled. That makes me pause. Master Rooster is a fool, as are many of the other masters, but I've always respected Tursel. He's hard but fair, and as a teacher, his students never end up needing a rescue. "I'm here to retrieve my wife," I say, but some of the fire has left my voice. "What's the problem?" "Hawk," his greeting is accompanied by a friendly handshake, and my mood smooths out a bit. "I'm glad you're here. I wish it were under different circumstances. We need to talk about your wife. When did you marry?" "Recently," is all I say. "Where is she?" "She's being questioned," Tursel says. "This is the first I've heard of your marriage, and to a student. You have to know this is rather unorthodox." "But not against the rules. Just like having a female student," I remind him. "As for my wife, she likes to argue, but I'm not entirely certain that's a crime," I point out. And mentally, I'm imagining how Aspeth has managed to piss off Master Tursel. "What's going on with the artifacts?" "First, I would like to know how you came to know her," he tilts his head, regarding me. "Did she approach you, or did you approach her?" I narrow my eyes at him. What is he getting at? "I'm not sure why that matters. She wanted to be a student at the guild. Remember that she approached Master Rooster and wanted to enroll?" He blinks. "Was that her?" "It was. Called herself Sparrow." Recognition dawns on his face, along with an amused smile that for some reason makes me want to punch him. "You remember now?" "I do," he chuckles, and the sound grates on my nerves. "She certainly doesn't lack for boldness. What made you decide to marry her?" "I decide to lay it all out. There's a rut coming up." His expression remains blank. Just as well. He wouldn't get it. He's not Taurian. "Mating ritual, once every 5 years. Unavoidable."
"Ah, to appease the family, then."
His brows go up. "Something like that." "And you trust her?" At my puzzled frown, he goes on.
"We have reason to believe your new wife is either a very skilled antiquities thief, or possibly a holder spy."
When I sputter, he tells me of the game that afternoon, how Aspeth took a great deal of time to choose certain items, and how she'd chosen perfectly each time and corrected them on the third one.
"She knew it was discharged. Either she was already in the know of that particular item, or she reads glyphs."
That makes me pause. "Only archivists and a few of the masters read glyphs."
"Exactly.
I know Magpie recognizes some of the more common glyphs, and I've learned to pick a few out, but the old Prelian written language is complex and requires a great deal of study, which is why it's only truly mastered by archivists, who aren't active members of the guild for one reason or another.
My question is, did she position herself with you in order to get an in with the guild?"
He gives me a worried look.
"Everyone knows that Magpie's students tend to be a bit unorthodox. Perhaps she deliberately sought you out."
I give my nose ring a tug before shaking my head. "I was the one who suggested we marry," I lie, trying to calm the situation. But I think about that night and how Aspeth and Gwenna showed up with an obviously drunken lark and asked, no, demanded, to be students. Surely not. Surely they're just two women who have decided to take on a particular challenge and not spies. "If you want my opinion..."
"Please."
"She's not a spy. She's a spoiled rich woman. She's hinted before that her family comes from wealth, and she arrived with tailored guild clothes and expensive fabrics. She's incredibly sheltered, and her physicality is terrible. If she truly was a spy, they would have sent someone who would easily pass the physical tests. As it is, I'm going to have to work her hard to ensure that she doesn't fail the basics. At Tersel's slow nod, I continue. It's far more likely that her father spoiled her and purchased artifacts on the sly. You and I both know that some merchants love to acquire contraband. That could be why she recognized them. Tersel nods again.
Most of the items she recognized seem to be trinkets. You could be right. Who is her father, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't know. His expression darkens again. I raise a hand in the air before he can go down the spy route again. I will keep an eye on her, and the moment I find out anything, I'll pass it along. But if you're asking me if she's dangerous, my answer is no. Not hardly. She'll be lucky if she passes the guild tests at all. She might have scholarly knowledge, but you and I both know that it only gets you so far in a dark tunnel. He grunts, stepping aside.
You're right. Perhaps I'm just panicking. You'll alert the guild if you find out anything in particular.
You know I will.
We shake hands again, and then he leads me into a waiting room. Aspeth sits next to an enchanted reading lantern, her hands clasped in her lap, her lips pressed into a firm, unhappy line. I can feel Tersel's gaze on us, so I move to Aspeth's side and rub my muzzle against her forehead, pretending affection.
Come along, wife. You've caused enough trouble today.
Trouble?
She echoes, indignant.
I've caused no trouble.
I take her by the arm and give Tersel another knowing look, one that indicates I'm a man put upon by a needy wife. Aspeth catches the look and makes another angry noise, jerking at my grip. She has every right to be annoyed at my expression, but I have to sell it to Tersel so he doesn't suspect anything. Leading her out of the building, I don't speak until we're in the streets, and I know for certain that there's no artifact hidden in an alcove and capturing her conversation for the guild to spy upon. I sling my arm over her shoulder, and the lecher in me can't help but notice that she fits under my arm perfectly, as if she were made to be a Taurian's woman. You want to tell me what's going on? She scoffs.
I don't know. Do I? Or are you suspicious of me too, simply because I can look past a shoddy paint job? Whoever made those artifact duplicates should be ashamed. Even a child could pick them out.
And yet no one else did except you, I muse. Every single time, if Master Tersel is to be believed. Are you just amazingly lucky, or is there something else I need to be aware of? She pauses, glancing up at me, and for a moment, I worry that everything Tersel said was right. That she truly is a spy of some kind, looking to steal information about artifacts, to take back to holders or to underground merchant rings. Her expression is guilty.
I haven't been totally forthcoming about my past.
You don't say.
Aspeth stares straight ahead, but she doesn't fight off my arm. If anything, she leans into me. It's like she's seeking support. It's both gratifying and slightly terrifying.
When I was a child,
she begins slowly,
I read a lot. My father was busy and my mother was dead. So my father's manservant had a standing order to find me any books I should like to read, and he would buy them. Early on, I was fascinated with old Prel, and decided I would teach myself glyphs.
That's impossible, I point out. It takes years to master glyphs, even with a teacher.
It takes twice as long when you don't have one,
she says, voice wry. And you're telling me you taught yourself?
Some. Then I had my father hire a tutor who was a retired artificer, and he taught me the finer points. But I learned much on my own. I had nothing else going on, and no friends.
She shrugs.
No siblings. What else was I going to do with my time?
Instead of suspicious, I feel a surge of sympathy for her instead. I imagine a small Aspeth, young and bossy and desperate for knowledge to make up for the lack of companions. I picture her with her annoying, shedding cat in her lap, a book in hand as she sits by the fire. It would explain why she's so terrible at the physical aspects of guild life. It would explain a lot of things, actually. It would explain why she married a Taurian. She has no people knowledge, just books. I grunt, Things are falling into place. I squeeze Aspeth's shoulder. Let's just get home, all right?
Am I in trouble? Is the team in danger?
No and no. We walk through the curving streets in companionable silence, and I keep my hand on her shoulder. It feels good to have her at my side. Feels strangely good to realize that Aspeth might need a friend and that I can be that person for her. Not that I lack friends, but there's something different about Aspeth. She's infuriating and a know-it-all, and incredibly vulnerable, too. Returning to the dorm, everyone hugs Aspeth, Meriden cries, and Gwenna fusses over her like a mother hen. Magpie is still with the others, but silent. At least she has her clothes on properly now. I'm a little surprised she's still awake, but I'm too tired to deal with it. Aspeth and I are going to bed, I tell them. You should all do the same. We have drills in the morning. They all groan. Kip disappears into his shell house, and the others scatter. 17. Hawk. The cat is waiting in our quarters, and Aspeth pets it and feeds it as it howls and makes a ruckus while I fill the copper tub near the fire. I've never heard such a loud creature, but she pets it, and fur flies everywhere, and talks to it as if it were human.
I know,
she tells the orange beast.
You've been sorely neglected today, but I promise I'll make it up to you. What do you think of that?
I pour the last of the water into the tub and then shuck my clothing, glancing over to see if Aspeth has noticed me. She's still petting the cat, utterly focused. I yawn, extending my arms out. By the bull god, I am fatigued.
Oh, big stretch.
Aspeth coos, startling me. I turn and she blushes, her face bright red.
The cat?
Right. I adjust my cock, stepping into the tub, and notice that her gaze follows me as I move. I sink into the tub and groan as the hot water soaks into tired muscles. Gods, it's been a long week. I relax in the water and then grab the cake of soap and rub it into the washcloth I've hung on the side of the tub. Aspeth clears her throat.
Should I wash you? Since we're married, and I should be learning about your anatomy?
I glance over at her. Her cheeks are pink and flushed, her eyes bright. I don't know at what point she became attractive to me, but I can't look away from her. There's something so very earnest about Aspeth. It's as if she puts everything she has into whatever task she's focused upon, be it guild business or something else. I suspect that she'd put all that enthusiasm into bed, too. And the thought makes my cock harden. While I appreciate the offer, you should know that if you touch me, it's not going to stay just a wash.
Oh.
She sounds dazed. She also doesn't get up from her spot on the edge of the bed, which tells me everything. We're not there yet. We're not at the carnal stage of our marriage. And I fight down the lick of impatience that curls up my spine. She's gone through a lot in the last week. Hells, I've gone through a lot, too. It's perfectly fine to wait. It's only the moon and the knot I'll be forming that's making me addled with lust.
How was your trip?
Aspeth asks in a bright voice as I scrub my skin.
Was it a rescue mission?
Oh, it was. My tone sounds bitter, even to myself. I try not to let guild politics get to me, but this season I can't seem to get away from them. It took us 2 days of hard tunneling to find a brand new team laid out with 3 broken ankles. They weren't even in a newer tunnel or a deeper one. Just idiots doing idiotic things, I guess.
Did they find anything?
I turned toward her, immediately suspicious. Cave mushrooms, hence the broken ankles. They started hallucinating and ran off a ledge. Luckily, it was a short drop. Unluckily for us, we had to carry them back. She makes a sympathetic sound.
So, no artifacts? That's a shame.
Why is it a shame? I'm still prickly, thinking about Tersel's comments from earlier, about Aspeth being a spy. Aspeth sighs heavily.
I'm vicariously dreaming through them, I suppose. I've always wanted to find an artifact. Not just any artifact, but something important. Something world-changing.
She chuckles, her expression wistful.
I suppose I should settle for any artifact before I start going on about world-changing ones, right? It's just... it must be so exciting. I can't imagine wasting your time in the tunnels with getting high.
I relax because I understand what she means. There's a rush you get when you first discover something of importance. It's a heady feeling that's only compounded when you turn it in to the guild and find out what it truly is. Or you're devastated to find out that it's a dupe or broken. This is a heartbreaking business, I tell her. It gives you the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
More highs than lows, I hope.
I think of Magpie and how often she returns to the bottle despite swearing that she'll quit. That's the hope, aye. She's quiet for a long moment.
May I ask you something, Hawk?
Of course. I dunk the washcloth again, trying to focus on getting clean.
Do Taurians kiss?
And there goes my focus. My cock stiffens, surfacing through the water like some sort of hungry leviathan. Aspeth isn't thinking about artifacts entirely. Kissing is a human invention. It's not as comfortable for Taurians. Our mouths don't work quite like yours. We prefer tail play to show public affection.
I see.
She's quiet for another long moment, and it takes everything I have not to look over at her. If I do, I worry she'll see the smolder in my gaze and get skittish. It's too soon for my eyes to turn red with the conquest moon, but five hells. I'm feeling its nearing presence in every throb of my cock. Aspeth is oblivious to my internal turmoil, however. Her voice grows bemused.
I suppose I shouldn't find it strange. My parents were a marriage of convenience, and I don't recall ever seeing them kiss. Lots of marriages are for convenience's sake, and I know I'm not the first human to marry a Taurian. I suppose I'm not missing out.
Missing out? Missing out? Because of a marriage to a Taurian. I stand fully upright, letting the water sluice off my form. My cock is fully hard and dripping water just like the rest of me. And I look over at her, making sure she sees every last bit of what is on display. I'll make sure you don't feel things are lacking. Trust me. She's comfortable on the bed, snuggled up with her cat. At the sight of me, her gaze goes to my cock and stays there. Her eyes wide as if she's just now realizing our size difference. She blinks, squints, blinks again, bites her lip. Doesn't look away, though. Not even when I reach over to pick up a towel and dry my arms off, making sure my cock continues to swing free, stabbing at the air with hungry need. Aspeth sits up slowly, setting the cat on the floor and hanging her legs over the side of the bed. Her expression has changed to thoughtfulness, even as she continues to stare at my cock. It prickles with the heat of her gaze, and I can feel pre-cum sliding down the domed head. She begins, her voice a croak. I bite back a chuckle. She clears her throat and tries again.
I cannot help but think about how you showed me your cock. Would you like to see my body, too?
You know I would. If bulls could purr, I'd be purring right now. She gets to her feet and tugs at the front of her boxy blouse. At the brown buttons that line the front. It's the most unflattering of garments on her, but I know what she looks like underneath. I know what she looks like wet. The guild uniform is just a tease.
If I was a bolder sort, I'd make a joke that I welcome critiques.
Aspeth gives me a nervous little half-smile, glancing up.
But I confess that I'm an absolute ninny when it comes to my body. If you find something repugnant, please don't tell me about it. I'm nervous as it is.
as if I'd ever tell her that she was anything but splendid. She fiddles with one of the buttons and then glances back at the bed.
Should I be sitting or standing?
You should be however you're comfortable.
So, in the library with a book upon my lap, then?
She jokes, tossing her blouse to the floor. Next go her boots and stockings, then the trousers she wears. She strips it all off methodically, and when she's down to nothing but a corset and her thin chemise, she pulls her hair down from its pinned bun and shakes it loose. With trembling hands, she pulls the laces free of her corset and tosses it aside. Her chemise follows after it a moment later. Then she slides back onto the bed and lies atop it like a corpse at a viewing, her legs tightly together, hands folded at her waist, eyes closed. It's not the sexiest of positions, but I'd have to be an idiot not to realize how unsettled she is. I move toward the foot of the bed, giving her space, and eye her pale, plump legs. I like them. I like the rounded curve of her calves, her delicate ankles, and her large feet. She's tall and solid and made as such, and I'm dying to skim my hand up one strong, thick thigh so I can watch her legs part. But I can tell she's nervous. It's the whole corpse thing, her eyes squeezed shut as if she expects me to take her measurements with a tailor's tape and tisk over what I find. I curl my fingers around her ankle, lifting it up and rub her foot. Her gaze flies open.
Oh.
It's fine, I tell her. You're fine. We're just a naked married couple in our room together. There's nothing to be nervous about.
Says you. You're beautiful.
She watches my hands move over her foot, her gaze heavy-lidded.
You're covered in muscle. I don't think I have a single one.
I bite back the laughter that threatens to huff out of me. I'm pretty sure I spotted one, at least one. I let my gaze move over her again, lingering at the gentle swell of her belly. She's soft here, too, an indication of her pampered life, but I rather like it. I like the thought of cuddling up to pillowy softness in a wife. Her breasts are just as large as I expected them to be. Flat on her back, they pull toward her arms, her nipples dark and prominent and tight. All of her looks soft and touchable, and I can't stop staring. There we go, I tease. There's a muscle. She laughs, trying to crane her head to gaze at the foot I'm holding near my chest.
Where?
I lean in, nuzzling her ankle. Right here. Aspeth whimpers, the sound soft and utterly enticing. Is this all right? I ask, even as I run my muzzle against her soft skin. Or should I stop?
I'm fine.
She promises, breathless. Her fingers twist in the blankets at her sides, and she watches me with parted lips.
You, my, this is fine. All fine.
I drag my mouth against her skin. She's so damn soft, so petable. I wanted you to touch me the other day. All you did was look.
Oh.
Aspeth breathes, and her flush goes right down to her pretty tits. They jiggle as she shivers, her nipples tightening, and I nip at her calf.
I wasn't bold enough. Not yet.
I'm bold, I tell her bluntly. Can I touch you more, or are you not ready for that yet? The look in her eyes grows soft, sensual. Her hands clench the blankets again.
You can touch me.
Good, because I'm aching. My cock is hard as stone. This is about easing her into pleasure, though, and I'm dying to touch her. I want to run my hands all over her skin, to feel her quiver when I caress her. I want to show her what it's like to be in bed with a Taurian, that she's not going to miss out on a single thing. That I can make her feel better than any human can if she'll just give me a chance. And now's my chance. I push her thighs apart, spreading her legs, and lower my head between her thighs before she has time to think about what I'm doing. Aspeth squeaks in surprise the moment my tongue brushes over her skin. The thing with Taurians, we have long, mobile, thick tongues. I can lick my own eyebrows if I'm so inclined, and human men can't compete with a Taurian who knows how to use what he's got. Kissing be damned. I've got better things to do with my mouth. Leaning in, I drag my tongue over her entire pussy in one smooth stroke. Her breath hitches, and then a moan escapes her.
You... oh.
You said you'd been touched before, Aspeth. How much? With the tip of my tongue, I tease her cleft open, rubbing against the bud of her clit and making her squirm. Did your human lover do that to you?
He touched my thigh.
She babbles, her fingers gripping the blanket next to her hips.
No, tongue, I thought you were going to touch me with your hands.
You're going to have to be more specific, wife. I flick my tongue over her cunt again, and she shivers in response. Tell me if you want me to stop, then, if this is too much for you.
Not too much.
She breathes, and then parts her thighs wider, bending her legs at the knees.
You should I...
You stay right there and let me taste you. I run a hand along the inside of her thigh, watching her reaction, and then lap at her cunt again. The taste of her hits my senses, musky and somehow sweet. She moans again, her hands fluttering toward me before settling back down to the bed. With amusement, I grab one of her hands and place it firmly on my shoulder. You can grab the horns if you like. Her fingers curl against my skin, and her eyes flutter closed. I tap my tongue against her clit again, and she arches.
You know that's really good. Really, really good. You can do that all you want.
Aspeth's voice takes on a dreamy quality.
Feels so nice.
I'm both amused and offended by her commentary. Nice isn't what a bull wants to hear when he tongues his wife. He wants to have her screaming. But Aspeth is a little more virginal than I'd expected, so I need to go slow. Make sure she doesn't get overwhelmed. Which is fine, because it allows me to savor every moment of this. I love the squirming she does with every tap of my tongue. I love the taste of her, as soft and delicate as her skin. My cock throbs in time with my pulse, dripping pre-cum all over the floor and the edge of the bed, but I can't be bothered with such trivialities. I've got my muzzle between my wife's thighs and everything else in the world, including my own pleasure, can wait for a bit. I push her legs into the air and wrap my hand around the base of my cock, squeezing to stop myself from coming before she does, because I need to taste her release, badly. I tease the tip of my tongue over her clit again, rubbing against the underside of it. I've had females in my bed with prominent clits in the past, and they're easy to tease to climax. Aspeth has sweetly thick folds, hiding her bud from my sight. And when my tongue teases over it, it's barely more than the tiniest of bumps. Perfectly fine. It's delicate and hesitant, just like her. No matter a woman's shape or form, I can figure out how to get her off. It just takes a little attention to detail. Squeezing my cock again, I tongue her and push into her core, using my thick tongue length like I would my cock. She sucks in a breath of surprise, squirming against my mouth. Something tells me that she's never had that happen before, and she doesn't know what to make of it. Her cunt clenches around my tongue, and I thrust into her. But she's no longer making those little pants of delight. Time to change plans. I go back to licking her pussy, using firmer and firmer strokes of my tongue, until she's wet and juicy and making those sweet sounds again. This time I focus on her clit, that intoxicating, half-hidden little bit that I know she'll like attention on. Using my free hand, I push the folds of her cunt apart, exposing her, and it forces the tiny flushed bud into prominence. I lick her again, and Aspeth's hands fly to my horns. The gurgling sound that erupts from her throat would make me laugh if I wasn't so mucking hard. As it is, I stroke my hand down my cock, my fingers messy with pre-cum. I should stop rubbing myself, should play with her pretty, jiggling tits and give them the attention they deserve. But I can't stop myself. Just like I can't stop myself from wrapping my lips around her now prominent clit and sucking lightly. The cry Aspeth makes is sharp, her hips rearing against my face. I try to pull away, only for her to arch her hips, following my mouth. And so I give her what she wants. Fuck drawing this out. She wants to come? I'll make her fucking come. I run my tongue over her clit, teasing along the underside before sucking on it again. She cries out once more. Then she's riding my face while I frantically stroke my cock, desperate to get her off before I erupt. The moment I feel the burst of her release against my tongue, I spray against the coverlets, bucking my hips against the mattress as I nut, my face buried between her thighs. Goddess Asteria's fabled paradise could not bring me more pleasure than this moment. Aspeth is panting, her hand to her brow as she struggles for breath. Her face and her glorious, heavy tits are flushed and the insides of her thighs are damp with her release. Mine is all over the side of the bed, but I can deal with that. Soon. For now, I'm happy to pay attention to her pussy, giving it slow, contented licks, and loving the way she trembles with each stroke of my tongue. I bet I could make her come again without too much effort. The thought feeds some primal urge in me, and I give her a wicked grin before pushing her pussy open wide again and lowering my head. This time, Aspeth reaches for my horns.
18. Aspeth. 20 days before the conquest moon. I blush all through breakfast the next morning. For his part, Hawk is quiet, but when I glance over at him across the table, he's got a smug look on his face, as if he's quite pleased with himself. He seems more relaxed today than he has been in the past, which just makes me blush harder. Luckily, no one else has noticed my silence. Gwenna is arguing with Lark and Meriden about the best type of toasted cheese sandwich, and Kip is watching them with an amused expression as Meriden goes into great detail about the perfect amount of butter that should be spread upon the bread before applying cheese. And while I have definite opinions about toasted cheese sandwiches, I can't focus on anything. There are parts of my brain that still haven't recovered from last night. I can't stop thinking about where he touched me. His tongue, the hungry noises he made as he pleasured me, the way I curled my legs around his shoulders and rocked shamelessly against him while he licked me to climax. I've read a few naughty books and touched myself a few times, but never in my wildest dreams did I imagine anything quite like that. I poke at my porridge, wondering how I'm possibly going to be able to hold a conversation with him today, because I distinctly remember the ring through his nose resting upon my mound as he licked me. "Good," declares a loud, brusque voice that makes me jump. "You're all here. Saves me the effort of locating your asses." I glance up in surprise as Magpie bustles into the kitchen. She's wearing her guild uniform, and while it's wrinkled and faded, it's the first time I've seen her look something like a guild master. Her normally disheveled, grey-streaked hair is pulled back into a tail, and she wears her sash over her shoulder, so encrusted with pins that it pulls the side of her blouse down. A spark of excitement races through me as she sets her pack on the table in the midst of breakfast, making the dishes rattle. What's going on? Hawk leans back in his chair, his arms crossing over his broad chest. It makes the muscles in his biceps bulge, and I can't stop staring. Gwyneth catches my eye, a curious expression on her face, and I immediately turn bright red, shoving another mouthful of porridge into my face and trying to look anywhere but at her. Or Hawk.
Well, now.
Hawk drawls, tilting his head and eyeing Magpie.
Look who's decided to be up right before noon. Going somewhere?
Shut up, you, Magpie tells him, but there's a grin on her face. You all kept bitching about teaching. Well, now you get your teacher. I'm taking charge. You are? Locke grins at her aunt.
Are you now?
His tone is even, unruffled.
I am.
She puts her hands on her hips.
You going to fight me over it?
Not at all.
Hawk seems guarded, but he nods after a moment's thought.
Glad you're feeling like joining the team. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, yesterday's scare with this one, she gestures at me, made me realize that if I didn't get off my ass and teach these idiots, they'd go back to their villages, and then where would I be?
Did you just call us the village idiots? Gwenna stiffens in her seat, scowling at Magpie.
I did, but you can prove me wrong.
She points at the pack she's placed in the center of the table, almost atop poor Kip.
I assume you all know how to pack your bag for tunneling.
Everyone pauses. I exchange a worried look with Gwenna and then glance over at Hawk, but he's not looking at me. Thank Asteria.
We haven't gotten that far yet. We've been working on drills.
Hawk says.
Physical fitness.
Spoken like a true Taurian.
Magpie continues and gives her head a little shake.
Look, I won't say that you don't need to be in good shape to hold your own in the tunnels, but as long as you're smart and know what you're doing, it's not that important.
There's a smack against wood, and I realize when Hawk stands up that the smack was his agitated tail hitting the nearest chair. He leans forward, his hands braced on the table.
Not important. Do you know how many idiots Taurians have to retrieve out of the tunnels every year because humans deem it not important to be competent at their mucking jobs?
I'm the teacher here, Magpie says in a hard voice. You want me to teach or not?
Hawk's nostrils flare so widely that the ring in his nose jumps. He looks furious, his tail lashing back and forth hard. It smacks Meriden in the arm, but her eyes are just as big and worried as mine.
Fine,
he says after a moment. His voice is flat with distaste.
You teach. Prove me wrong.
Good, Magpie declares. She stands a little straighter, looking more authoritative by the moment.
You're all going to get a lesson on what to pack, and then we're going camping.
Camping? Gwenna sputters. What the muck does that have to do with tunneling? The guildmaster's eyes gleam.
That's what I'm about to show you.
A few hours later, we've all got bags packed. Squeaker has enough dried food for several days, plus I've left instructions for the nest maid to look after her. And we head off. Hawk wants us to march from Magpie's dorm all the way to a camp somewhere in the distant trees far outside the city. But Magpie insists that we catch a ride instead.
Won't do us any good if they're all too tired to learn, she tells Hawk. And like you said, they're not in great shape.
She wins this battle, too. And I worry that Hawk's going to be in a terrible mood by the time the day is over. We ride out on the back of an empty vegetable wagon, leaving the market now that its goods have been dropped off. It's not the fastest ride, but it's the right price, apparently. We all climb on and sway along as the mules pull down the cobbled, twisting streets. The pack on my back feels cumbersome, but not as heavy as the ones Hawk has been making us carry. I sit next to Gwenna on one side, Meriden and Lark on the other side of the wagon. Kip races back and forth, his house a large shield on his back, and doesn't seem to want to conserve his energy at all. Maybe he doesn't need to. He seems to have enough enthusiasm for all of us. Master Magpie rides with the driver, talking his ear off, and Hawk sits on the back of the wagon, his heavy legs hanging over the edge, almost as if he doesn't want to be with us. It makes me a little worried. I glance over at him on the far end of the wagon, but he's not been very talkative today. Is it Magpie? Or is he regretting what we did last night? As we leave the city behind, the rutted road curves past the Dig for Artifacts field, which makes Magpie point and laugh as people shovel away at holes in the midst of the loose dirt.
Look at those fools.
Are they fools for wanting to find something? Meriden's voice is wistful. We all watch the people in the field digging and sweating, using shovels and buckets to move mountains of dirt aside. Most people can only dream of finding an artifact. I understand why they'd spend a few pennies for the chance.
No one ever finds anything, Locke admits, shrugging. It's just people fleecing the tourists.
I'm not as jaded as Magpie and Locke. Part of me still wants to go out there and try my own luck. I'd be one of the people out there with a spade and pail happily digging away. I squint watch the blobs of people with wistful admiration. They have a dream, and they're going after it in the best way they can. Nothing wrong with that.
Gwenna nudges me. She's seated next to me after making both Meriden and Kip switch places with her.
Everything okay? Why wouldn't it be okay?
My face immediately colors bright red, making a mockery of my casual tone. If she notices my blush, she doesn't say anything.
You're normally not quiet about all this, she whispers, gesturing at the wagon. You're usually nattering on about how they did things in Old Prell or how traditional guild members do things.
I fuss with the hem of my sleeve, agitated. Keeping my voice low, I say,
Do you think Hawk is upset over Magpie being here today?
Why would he be? Isn't she the one in charge? She nudges me.
Or are you afraid your lover is going to be upset?
I clap a hand over her mouth. Shh! Her eyes widen. She licks my palm, forcing me to release her. And I wipe my hand on my clothes, glaring.
What the fuck?
She whisper mouths.
Are you blushing?
Her gaze moves to Hawk, and then back to me, and she leans in closer.
Are you two fucking already? I thought you were waiting for this moon shit.
My face feels as if it's on fire.
We are. It's just... I
shake my head, unable to continue.
He,
she prompts, giving me an encouraging look.
Rearranged your organs? Gave you the dicking of your life? What?
I twist my blouse in my hands. I don't have anyone to share such things with. Never have. Even when I had my heartbreak over Barnabas, I couldn't confess to anyone how hurt I was, how foolish I'd felt.
Gwenna had been my servant, and it would have been inappropriate of me. But now we're both just guild fledglings, and I desperately want to talk to someone about it.
I lick my lips and then lean in to whisper,
He licked me inappropriately.
She blinks, and then a sly smile curves her mouth.
You do know it's not inappropriate if you're married, right? Hush. I was taken by surprise.
I am too. He seems kind of like a stern type, but that's a good sign.
A man who isn't afraid to make his lady come first is a good man in my book. He did make you come, right? That does it. My face is going to be permanently red. When they paint my portrait, I look like a ball of fire from neck to hairline. I do hold up two fingers, though. Gwenna nods slowly. My esteem of him grows by the day. Mine does, too. So help me. We arrive at our campsite near dusk. It's a pretty area, with a lot of trees growing near a winding stream. On one side of the water are fields and pastures with cattle grazing. On the other side, things are a little more wild and unkempt. The trees cluster together tightly, not a single path to be seen, and the underbrush is so thick that I can't imagine crossing it. Scrubby bushes mingle with weeds and lead to taller trees in the distance. It's in this rather unimpressive place that Magpie smiles and waves a hand in the air.
Here we are.
Where is here, exactly? I ask, glancing around. I don't see any sort of buildings nearby,